Now serving the entire cafe right from your countertop with a Ninja Luxe Cafe. Espresso, drip coffee, cold brew. If you can crave it, you can brew it. No barista badge required. Barista Assist technology handles the hard parts. Grinding, weighing, brewing, so you can take the credit. Top it all off with velvety, dairy, or plant-based microfoam. Hot or cold, all hands-free, naturally. You bring the craving. You bring the company. We'll bring the cafe. And maybe the bragging rights. Now serving the Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Save big money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Monday, February 23rd, the year of our Lord 2026, and this is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Hope you're doing quite well today. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Some wins this past weekend for the Gamecocks. That's always good in the various sports. Some unfortunate football news that we've been tracking here, and also a good week ahead. I think with baseball, obviously, the Friday game with Army was disappointing. That was kind of was what it was. Gamecocks lost 9-5, rebounded, beat Navy 8-0, and then Air Force yesterday. Pulmonary after the game. Carolina won 4-2. They got off to a really good start at the plate and then proceeded to go back into a shell. Pulmonary said after the game the wind was a factor. I suppose it was. Tough conditions. Air Force had got the best of them in the bullpen, but they won. A win is a win. 4-2, 6-2 is the record now. Queens on Wednesday, 6:30 p.m., and then it's the Clemson Tigers coming in for the annual weekend series and sort of the litmus test, if you will. Very important series for the Gamecock baseball program under Paul Maneri. They got to hit the ball better. If you want to say the wind was a factor, and look, the wind is a natural occurrence. It's either blowing and it's a factor or it's not. It's not a conspiracy or an excuse. Maybe that's the case, but this team can't play like the majority of the time it has played offensively and expect to beat Clemson in any of the games, quite frankly. Sometimes Clemson, South Carolina, you will get like a 2-1 game. And so maybe they sneak one in because the Gamecocks have been pitching relatively well with the exception of the Army game. I think that the arms have been there. Zach Russell picked up another win yesterday, but, you got to hit the ball, better. Will Craddock playing quite well. We're going to have, by the way, a combo show today on the show, morning show. It'll be all three of us for 3 hours from 10 to 1. Jamie Bradford's going to dive into some of the ins and outs of that. I'm going to talk a little football. Mad Dog will be there. So it should be a fun show. We don't do that often enough. I just decided what the heck with everything going on. Why not do it? Congrats to the USA hockey team, by the way. Men's hockey team winning the gold medal against Canada. That was a big deal on a Sunday morning across the country. Certainly – was a great story. Great story there. Men's basketball won. They defeated Mississippi State 97-89. Shot 50% from three. Got out-rebounded, but, showed some fight in the basketball game. 3-11 overall, 12-15 in the SEC. I think that obviously with the record like it is, the more Lamont Paris can win down the stretch, I think the safer are the chances of him coming back next season. More investment, obviously, that's you don't want to – they have to invest. They have to get some alignment. And we're going to probably bring that up on the show later. This isn't a basketball show. But, I think that – it's important to win and show some improvement down the stretch. And they have. Lamont was talking about in the post game that, the Alabama and Florida road games were there were some good things there. And then it's good to get a win. It's good to score 97 points. We have not seen this team shoot like that, a lot this year. It's and Paris said he's shocked in the post game that it didn't happen. I think we all are. I mean, it's been kind of, but when you're that's what you rely on, and you don't get it done, you're gonna lose. But they beat Mississippi State, and that's good. Big tough loss for the Bulldogs. They're not having such a great year this year after getting to the tournament last season. Women clinched at least a share of their fifth straight regular season SEC title. Blew Ole Miss out of the water, 85-48. Game day was there Sunday. They'll go for the outright championship on Thursday, against Missouri at 8 p.m. on the SEC network. So Dawn Staley's team, they're really hot right now. They're really playing good basketball at this point. 1 week from Wednesday, Carolina football will kick off another spring practice under Shane Beamer. He has a press conference, I believe, tomorrow to introduce, and this was official over the weekend. They sent out a press release. Matthew Smiley, former Buffalo Bills special teams coordinator, spent last year at Penn State, is the hire to replace Joe DeCamillis, who went to the Raiders. So there is all the news. And of course, Jakari Harris Peak news broke during the weekend. You could get some info on that by subscribing to our newsletter. It's free. It's about 5 to 10% of, the volume of content. The newsletter is just kind of is what it is. Daily read. It's for the masses. It's I don't want you to think that when we launch InsideTheGamecocks.com that that's going to be all it is. Obviously, when you're kind of a full service website or whatever, like the Big Spur or Gamecock Central, there's a lot of other elements to it that you can't accomplish with a newsletter. But we like the product so far, and it seems like people are enjoying it. And you can sign up yourself. It's free and easy. Go to InsideTheGamecocks.com. That's InsideTheGamecocks.com. Just pop in your email, and you're on the newsletter list. Had hundreds of you sign up during the weekend. Have streamlined that process a bit, and it's worked. It's a lot more people are signing up because it's easy to get to. It's easy to remember, InsideTheGamecocks.com, and that'll be the website. But for now, there's a nice landing page, kind of explains what's going on. Sign up. You can keep up with it. It's all good. And keep up with the Gamecocks with us right here. So on Peak, I guess I can go ahead and say it because it's out this morning. You gotta sometimes with specifics on injuries, you need to if a contact tells you and fills you in on it, you try to kind of keep it quiet because there's HIPAA laws and stuff like that, but it is his patella tendon. It is not the ACL or MCL. In many ways, it's more serious. It just depends on the severity of the injury to the patella as to whether or not he will play next year. Now, there's a lot of statements that were out yesterday and from Beamer that I do want to clarify a little bit, and I'm not clarifying the statement and saying it's wrong, but some people have taken it and run with it a little bit. It says we hope to get him back for the season, or this season. We hope to get him back this season. Well, that's not necessarily, oh, he's going to be back August 5th or whenever they start preseason camp, and he's going to be back for Kent State, Towson, all that. And I laid all that out yesterday in a special episode that there are best case scenarios and worst case scenarios. He could be out for the whole year. He could be back mid-year. He could be back for the start of the year if he's a fast healer. It just kind of depends on the severity of it and all that good stuff. I was told by a contact yesterday that it looked a little worse when it happened. Always does, but we'll see. You just got to hope. Two things have to happen. Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst if you're the Gamecocks. You got to get an answer at left tackle. Like I said, if Josiah Thompson can rock and roll, that's obviously a guy to look at. But then after that, we went over it yesterday. It's wide open. I would anticipate Seth Smith from Northern Arizona, since he was a left tackle last year, getting a good look there. Good news, bad news. Bad news is you can't replace Ya'Karius Peak. He's an elite player, proven in every sense of the word. No sunshine and rainbows about that injury. It's just there's no positive when you have a player like that that's up in the air playing. Okay, let's just get that out of the way. But you can't all everybody just can't sit around and go, oh my God, we lost Ya'Karius Peak, which is what I think sometimes people want me to do. It's just like you got to wallow in the misery with us, JC. And that's just not, I mean, you wouldn't listen if that's all I did. My job, I think, is to kind of tell you, move forward, move on. You can't do anything about it. But you do have to play a football season, and you do have to put an offensive line on the field. And that's exactly what the coaching staff's going to do. It's why people say next man up. I would much rather, while keep you informed and updated on what happens with Peak, I'd much rather have the next man up mentality here, because that's critical information, right? And so there, but clearly though, that's not cool. That's not good at all. What happened? There's no way to sit there and go, oh well, sometimes a guy I'll get injured and the player behind him, he's close and maybe he's a little bit more talented than the starter, and the talent gets out there and it kind of takes over, and there's that. He kind of Wally Pipped and the team's better off. This is not one of those scenarios. Absolutely, South Carolina's a better football team with Peak at his peak, so to speak. It is a bad blow. That said, on the offensive line, as we all know, you have to have five playing as one. So even if, the key to that spot, that room this season, is it has always been five. Not just having a really good left tackle. There's bad offensive lines that have really good left tackles. And what you don't want to have happen is for a left tackle to be like your big weak link. I got everything but a left tackle. Oh gosh, that's the blind side and all that good stuff. So anyway, one great player can obviously make a difference all over the field, but when you're talking about offensive line in general, most coaches will tell you that it's about five playing as one. And that didn't happen a lot last year, quite frankly, really the last few years. It was always one guy doing this, or even in the plays they had blocked well, somebody would mess up. Even then when the offensive line would block, a tight end would miss a block or a back. I mean, or there's a wrong read by the quarterback. There's all kinds of things that went wrong last year. But again, no spin zone, and the offensive line was atrocious. And worse, we sat around all, oh, they have to be better, right? They weren't all that good last year. Now they got worse. They got a lot worse collectively. But it's a new day. So that's going to be a big storyline. Curious to see what Beamer has to say about it. They are looking for a JUCO. They've been looking for a JUCO tackle. Lost the kid to LSU that was a May graduate, but Ashton Mazzoni from Iowa Western played at Midland Valley. He is from Graniteville, South Carolina. I had a friend that went to Midland Valley when I was in Carolina, like 99-ish, 2000. That's the only person only connection I have to that school. As far as unless somebody I know, like I don't know that they went there or whatever, but he's 6'5", 310, was committed to the Washington State Cougars, decommitted, opened it back up. A lot of school, East Carolina, Liberty, schools like that, Boise State, and then South Carolina. Gamecocks have him in for a visit next Thursday and Friday, March 5th and 6th. I would anticipate them being able to land him. If they like him enough to land him. And then also the grad transfer route. And you may say, transfer? What? I thought the portal, the only one portal window. That's true, but there's a loophole. The graduate transfers can still, just like they've always been able to do, if you graduate, you can transfer for free. So that rule remains in effect. There's no telling what that pool of players will look like. It's a crapshoot, especially with one portal window and everybody being kind of safe and ready to go. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. It could be interesting if we end up with this big, if the agents get in, we know this big chaotic grad transfer market this year. That's going to be fun, right? But it could benefit the Gamecocks if one pops up somewhere. So they are in the market for that, absolutely. But you just wish Peak the best, hope for the best, prepare for the worst with regards to that particular injury situation, which we'll get into on the show later. So those of you that have followed me through the years know that I think the blue chip ratio is one of the most Captain Obvious theories that's out there about recruiting college football. And I think that's what makes it popular, quite frankly. I think that, simply saying that with one exception this past season, that teams with over 50% blue chip talent win national championships. That's pretty accurate through the years, right? So, and everybody talks about it, and I think it's a good way to, I guess, your blue chip ratio, I don't think tells you you're going to win. It may tell you that most of the time, with the exception of this past season, you have a chance to win. That's good. Everybody wants to feel good about their chances. But there's teams with big blue chip ratios that stink it up. Most of them are big brand schools, and there's teams that may not win the whole thing, but they sure as heck have great seasons and beat a lot of teams that do, blah, 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 blah. But I did want to talk about it today. So I went through and, South Carolina added some players late in the portal that obviously did not have big high school rankings. A lot of them come from lower levels. Armando Neves is one of them. Boo Boo, the offensive lineman that we talked about from Missouri State, was one of them. Charlie Mulele, the receiver from Holy Cross. Not that they're not good players. Actually, I think they are, but we can look at it and see they probably didn't have big reps out of high school. And so I guess that impacts your blue chip ratio. And that's kind of the fallacy in it, especially during the portal era, is, and I've said this before, it's not the best players out of high school. About 60% of them end up being the best players. Then there's a whole swath of players that end up passing them, and then they go down and that kind of thing, because it's a developmental sport. What is true at the beginning, or what may be true at the beginning, because there are just flat out misses that happens, busts. What's true at the beginning is not always true at the end. And you have a five-star guy that has just a fine college career, starts, plays, is pretty good, doesn't get to the NFL, which is what that is supposed to mean in theory. Like we decided that as a recruiting industry years ago, that you're projecting the NFL draft, because that's, we're not projecting the Pro Bowl or the Super Bowl roster or anything like that. It's just the draft. So if you're good enough to get drafted, and for another set of evaluators that have infinitely more resources than we do on the recruiting end, then we did our job, because you did something in college that made an impact. We used the NFL sort of metrics to split hairs, because you're in a national ranking, you're comparing guys from different states, different levels of competition. Different positions, position value is big. Quarterbacks are going to be up. You use the draft data to kind of guide you. So that's what four and five star is supposed to mean in theory. They're about 400 four stars a year. I think there's less draft picks than that, but you got to give yourself some cushion, right? And so that's what that means. NFL players, guys that get drafted, guys that go on, and play pro football, even if they don't get drafted, I think that would still be a win, right? So, you look at the blue chip ratio for the different schools, and then apply that to winning, and will Indiana be an outlier? That's the thing I've read. Everybody's saying that with any connection at all to recruiting rankings. I think that just like a lot of things, it's not yes or no. It's not a hard yes or hard no. It's the data in down the road in 10 years will, in my opinion, my prediction is it will show that it's not 100%, but about 70 to 75, maybe even 80. I don't think Indiana's a one-hit wonder just because you're going to have a team that may have a coaching change, right? And they may be a blue blood school, right? Or maybe not. But they're going to have a coaching change, and then they're going to go to the portal and get a lot of guys. They're going to evaluate it well and get a lot of players that maybe are really, really good. Even players that are known that are really, really good, but the recruiting industry maybe had them a little low, or they're just great talent maximizers or whatever, and they're going to win a national championship. That's essentially what Indiana did, but on a much larger scale. I'm talking like this blue chip ratio, hypothetically, could be like 46, 42%. And then that would obviously, the theory takes a hit. I still think, though, that talent with the way the rankings go, they hit at about a 60% clip, and I think your odds are higher. I think that's basically what recruiting rankings are. Odds. Your odds of winning are higher. It's like Vegas point spreads. Vegas point spreads, a lot of research goes into them. They're not always accurate, are they? No, because nobody would win any money. But there's a reason the house normally wins, right? There's reasons why they put a lot more thought into it than just, I'm going to go make a prediction because this is how I feel. So that's kind of what they are. Point spreads, over under win totals, expert driven analysis that give you I guess, an idea of what to expect, or a formula for prediction that is not always accurate. So that's recruiting rankings out of high school to me. I think portal rankings need to be blown up and redone. I think that's more of an impact score. I think that that's more of something that may not, may, probably not even star rankings, in my opinion. So that's all that. And so, but for the purposes of the blue chip ratio transfers, it's just high school rankings. And Bud, who created this, said that. So. That's how it goes. So this was interesting going through. And again, Carolina got some guys at the end that maybe caused it to dip below 50%. I counted 92 guys that entered on scholarship, so to speak. That number's not hard and fast because they, I think Recker, Jake Recker, Darren Usher mentioned he's on scholarship. Jamie and Risher, I think, is on scholarship as a walk-on. Didn't count those guys. Just counted guys that they've recruited in from the portal or the high school ranks. So they counted 92. You can go as much as 105. And guys and gals, this is a pretty good number. So 40 blue chippers on the roster out of the 92, 43.5%. I think that's pretty solid. Also, considering some of the guys that are on the team that are pretty doggone good players, like Justin Okoronkwo was a three-star coming out of high school. I think he's going to be pretty doggone good. You start thinking about Troy Pikes as a player we've talked about. He was a no-star, two-star, maybe a low three coming out of Atlanta before he went to Georgia Southern. There's a lot of guys like that. Judge Collier, who everybody's counting on, was a three-star in-state player. A lot of guys like that. The whole offensive line, even Peak, who we talked about earlier, was a three-star player coming out of Valdosta High School. He did not count toward the blue chip ratio. The guy that everybody's rightfully down in the dumps about getting hurt did not count. Member of Bruce Feldman's freaks list did not count. So 43.5%. That's high. And it's been moving up under Beamer. I believe South Carolina's high school class, as small as it was, and for 26, 53.7% per on three. And it's gotten better and better, higher and higher and higher. Higher is not always better. Better and better, higher and higher since Beamer's been here. But because they use the portal and because they're, good at finding guys that, Demetrius Knight, Kyle Kennard were both mid three-star guys out of high school, and everybody misses them, right? Nick Emanuore was. so that's, but there's a point to that. A point to that I'm going to get to. So 43.5%, given the expansion of roster numbers in the SEC, and I didn't go look at everyone else's, and these are unscientific numbers. It's quite possible I missed a digit here or there, but 43.5% is high, especially for an expanded roster. 40 out of, if you were at 85, that would be right at 50, give or take one or two. So, and if you were at like, okay, so if you were 81, that would be high as well. And then there's enough guys that were not blue chip recruits that you kind of say, well, this is a pretty talented roster on paper. And it is. Definitely is. So 43.5% for the 2026 Gamecocks as things stand right now. Now they get this JUCO guy. Maybe they do get a grad transfer. The number may go down. I don't know if that matters, but the number may go down. But I think that's really solid considering an expanded roster that we're in the portal era, that the portal is all about taking the best players, and you just kind of go from there. But that's that means Gamecocks have been, and again, transfer portal rankings do not count. And that's not my rule. That's, the creator of the theory, so to speak. So, you like that. You like that if you're the Gamecocks heading into 2026. Here's where it gets interesting. And I went back and looked. The 2012 Gamecocks went 11-2. My goodness. When that team was at its best, I mean, the 35-7 win over Georgia. Really good team, both sides of the ball. I mean, outstanding football team. Ranked as high as third in the country. Now, the reason I picked them instead of 13 or 11, I thought 13 had, so there are three different things. I thought 2011, actually, from a talent standpoint, have to go, I'd have to run the numbers to see the blue chip ratio. But that team had Alshon Jeffrey and Stephon Gilmore on it, too. And I believe Melvin Ingram as well. So three first and second round draft picks off 2011. That was probably the more talented team. Glancing at it though, the blue chip ratio was not that much higher than South Carolina in 2012. I thought 2011 was the most talented. I thought 2012 was the best team. Like the team that could have gone out and won against anybody. The one bad loss was at Florida. Carolina actually outgained the Gators that day. It was a weird, weird game. But this team, obviously beat Georgia 35-7. Backup quarterback Dylan Thompson led them to a win at Clemson. 11-2. They had some great moments. And this team, had they ended up winning the division, Alabama was great in 2012, but they almost lost to that Georgia team Carolina beat. And then Notre Dame would have been, wouldn't that have been something? Notre Dame. that would have, Everett Golson would have been the quarterback for Myrtle Beach for Notre Dame. But that's all in the past and speculation, but I picked them because they were considered to be the best one. 2013 came the closest. Had it not been for that loss at Tennessee, the stars would have aligned and also probably played the toughest schedule when you count out of conference because they had UCF on the road and Clemson, and those teams were really good. But 2012 is considered the best, by a lot of folks. So I picked that right in the middle because those teams are hard because they all have the same record. They all had different strengths and weaknesses. So I just went with 2012. So here is the blue. This is interesting. The blue chip ratio for the 2012 Gamecocks, 25.9%. I'm going to repeat that. One of the best teams in program history that went 11-2. The other reason I picked 2012 is a lot of people like to say, oh, the division was down and blah, 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 during that point in time. And I think if you look at the history of the SEC and you look at that period, yes. I mean, Carolina won it with a 5-3 record in 2010. I don't know that anybody was great during that point in time. And the Gamecocks really had a great SEC East record during that time. They went for a while without even losing an SEC East game. But that particular year, Florida was 11-1 and Carolina and Georgia was 11-1. And Carolina was 10-2. And so, you know, pretty good. I'm sorry, was Georgia 10-2? No, Georgia was 11-1 because they would have played for the national title. The Gators were 11-1. Florida beat Georgia beat Florida. Florida beat South Carolina. South Carolina beat Georgia. And then lost, the Gamecocks lost by 2 points at LSU. So that was the difference. But that year, you know, that was the SEC East had three pretty daggum good top 10 type football teams. And then you had Alabama in the West. But so that's another reason why I picked it. But 25.9% blue chip ratio. South Carolina had, I believe, when I'm looking at this right now, three. So I guess 19, 18. They had 18 blue chip prospects on their roster. 22. I'm sorry. And so here was the hit rate, though, on that. It was actually pretty good. And I've got something to say about the hit rate, too, as far as where they're from. So you had eight NFL guys, either drafted or ended up playing in the NFL. Clowney, Lattimore, Demir Byrd, the second Mike Davis, who didn't really play a lot that year, but you count him. A.J. Cann, Brandon Shell, Devontae Holloman, and Jarrell Adams, who was young. I don't think he played a whole lot that year either. But six of eight of those are from South Carolina. Mike Davis from Atlanta, Byrd from Sicklerville, New Jersey. You had three more difference makers, all from South Carolina. So difference makers would be guys that were dang good college players that you really, really loved, right? But they didn't make the NFL, right? You missed them when they were gone. And so Shaq Rowland, Victor Hampton, Kelsey Quarles would have been in the difference maker part of it, along with Shaq Wilson. So Shaq Wilson's pretty good. So three of the four from South Carolina. Then you got contributors and busts. You know, there was seven of those guys. Only in the bust category, only one from South Carolina. And then contributors, three of the four from South Carolina. It's guys like Phillip Duke, Sean Carson, DeMario Jeffrey. Yeah, they played. You know, they weren't starters. They weren't necessarily difference makers, but they were contributors, and they played. Starters would be another category as well. That's kind of just a starter, not necessarily a difference maker type of guy. But those are the blue chip recruits. Those are the guys rated four stars or higher. So that's interesting. I mentioned Shaq Wilson. I shouldn't have. He's not a four star. That's the next category. So how'd that team win, JC? 25.7% blue chip ratio. My goodness. Steve Spurrier must have just been magically, maybe it was his magic. And part of it was, I think, more so from he was a good play caller, obviously. He dialed up some games and obviously gave a strategic advantage. I think how he is as a head coach, though, was the secret sauce here. Yeah, I think that, you know, number one, they stayed healthy. G.A. Mangus told me one time, our top, when we were there, our top 30 can compete with anybody in the SEC, but you can't get them hurt. So he was kind of fanatical with that. Number two, I think that the way he coached at South Carolina was designed just to win, to get the win, not necessarily designed to be overly aggressive with a bunch of points scored like at Florida. So this is a different type of team. They ran the ball. They played defense. Connor Shaw, really good running the ball. But from a roster standpoint, here's where the secret sauce, right? And this should give you some hope, and I'll tie it back to 2026. So there were guys that were three stars and below that were NFL guys. There were nine of them. Nine of the 3-star and below guys on the roster that fit into these different categories, which is be starters, you know, difference makers, and NFL guys. So Connor Shaw, one of them, 3-star. Bruce Ellington, one of them, 0-star. He's a basketball recruit. That may not be fair. I mean, I would have rated Bruce Ellington a 4-star football recruit based on film, but he's basketball, so I don't think the blue chip ratio compilers would count him, so we're not counting him. TJ Johnson from Ainar, NFL guy, 3-star guy from Ainar. DJ Swearinger, wow. Devin Taylor, Ronald Patrick, a starting offensive lineman. Corey Robinson, starting offensive tackle. Busta Anderson was a young tight end, but remember he made some plays in that Georgia game. And then Ace freaking Sanders. So that's nine NFL guys. And of those, four were from South Carolina. The difference makers, I think Dylan Thompson was a difference maker. He made a difference in the Clemson game and the Michigan game and the bowl, and then ended up setting records. So he was a difference maker. I mentioned Shaq Wilson, difference maker. Had a pick six against Vandy that year. Brandon Wild, certainly, maybe not this year, but in 11 and 13 and 14 and 15. Brandon, I think Brandon got hurt. This was the season he got hurt. But he's a difference maker career. Jimmy Legree, pick six against LSU. Nick Jones, big difference maker from Burns, Lattimore's teammate throughout the time he was at Carolina. One, two, three. So four of those five. Where are they from? South Carolina. Thompson, Bowling Springs, Wilds, Blythewood, Legree, Buford, Nick Jones from Burns. Then starters, solid contributors. Justice Cunningham. I struggled with this because Justice in 2012 made a difference. Well, he may be a difference maker for Pageland Central. Byron Jaridot, solid starter. Kenny Miles had to be the starting running back toward the end and certainly was a solid starter during his time there. And then Bryson Williams in the secondary from Georgia, kind of a guy they just found. No other offers. He was really solid during his time there. And so, you know, nine, five, four, you know, it's 18 guys, 3 stars or below, that were either starters, difference makers, or NFL players on that roster. So when you can supplement the blue chippers with that, and again, it's an in-state heavy deal, then, you know, you're going to be able to put together a pretty good roster at South Carolina. Again, it's not a lot of numbers. That's why people argue with me sometimes when I say the depth at Carolina is better now than it was under Spurrier. And I don't think they're looking at the two deep. You know, I don't think they're looking at the two deep. But when Connor Shaw, Bruce Ellington, TJ Johnson, DJ Swearinger, Devin Taylor, Ronald Patrick, Corey Robinson, Busta Anderson, and Ace Sanders, along with Dylan Thompson, Shaq Wilson, Brandon Wiles, Jimmy Legree, Nick Jones, Justice Cunningham, Bryson, when all those guys don't count towards your blue chip ratio, I mean, you know, that means you can be, I guess, an outlier. But yeah, a lot of good players on this team in 2012, but that blue chip ratio would not be up there. So what does that mean? Tie it back to, you know, the 44.5, 43.5% Beamer's at now. Beamer's recruited the state. Beamer's found players in the state that aren't rated blue chip wise. I think that when you look back at 2012, how's it applicable to now? Because it's all about getting enough talent to compete, and depth is important as well, as we know. And it doesn't matter where it comes from or what it's rated. That's the bottom line. What we're trying to do is predict if that's possible or how. Talk about the how they're going to get there. Well, I think that just like the Spurrier staff, which a lot of these players, Shane Beamer was the recruiting coordinator, heading up recruiting when they arrived with the Gamecocks. And obviously, you got Clowney and Lattimore in there. They were as good. Clowney's best year was 2012. You know, You got to make sure that you have enough Clowneys and Lattimores, but you also have to make sure you have enough DJ Swearingers, Connor Shaws, and Busta Andersons, and Ace Sanders, and Devin Taylors, and guys like that. And a lot of those guys, not all, but a lot, come from South Carolina. So Beamer's recruiting that part of that area, that's kept going. It's kept going as far as the in-state talent goes. I sit and think about Jaquel Hallman from Blackville, who's probably gonna back up at nickel this year, part of the return team, but a fantastic athlete. Think about those defensive ends, Quay Dodd and Anthony Addison, and what they will become. Probably a lot of the 2025 class, like I talked about the other day. You look in the 2026 class, Caden Ramsey from Cross, small town guy. And so I think that's, when you talk about can South Carolina get over the top, can, when can this be, from a talent standpoint, a roster that can go compete for a playoff berth? I think it's there now. I'm not predicting a playoff berth because out of the 16 rosters in the SEC, probably 13 of them are capable of getting to the playoff. And so it's hard, But when you just look at it on paper, South Carolina's already got a baseline of blue chippers heading into the season that the 2012 team did not have as far as numbers go. Not, is there a player as good as Lattimore, a player as good as Clowney? I think Dylan Stewart's very good. I don't know that he's Jadeveon and Clowney or hadn't shown it yet. Can he be? Yeah. You don't have a Marcus Lattimore running back, obviously, but you got a Lenore Sellers at quarterback. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think getting in position is important. And I wanted to kind of break it down from the standpoint of, hey, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, one of the best teams ever, blue chip ratio was only 25.7%. Or what? Did I get that right? 25.9%. Actually, no, 24.9%. Because I miscalculated. I had a player, maybe it was Shaq Wilson on the 4-star train that wasn't. I think we rated him 4 stars at 24/7. Other people did not have him there. So composite. Now I go by 24/7 Sports Composite. It's the composite, the consensus, all that's the most accurate. I don't put a lot of stock in other than, like, as far as what I cite, I love reading it and everybody puts in hard work, but the individual networks rankings are going to always vary, and different people have different ways of doing it. So I like composite consensus, that type of thing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I did want to kind of bring out that eye-opening comparison because people that were around and rocking and rolling during that time, as we get further away from it, that was a hell of a team. They got the third in the country, and shoot, scheduling kind of did them in because they had to play three top 10 teams in a row, and Georgia did not. And that was those were good times because you felt at that point in 11, 12, 13, Carolina showed up expected to win every game. And a lot of people that look back on that era, believe Carolina was loaded, and they were. But as we were talking about how to become loaded again, I did want to emphasize that back then it wasn't just all about the blue chip ratio. The blue chip ratio was low. It is about getting as many good players as you can. And when you look at Beamer's blue chip ratio, it's much higher. And then he's still getting these types of guys that hopefully, I'll say hopefully, because some of them are not there yet, hopefully can become like this group that the non-blue chippers, the NBCs, so to speak, on the 2012 rosters. Many of them played in the National Football League and are among the most memorable players in the history of the program, at least the recent history. All right, don't forget the show in the morning show combo today, getting cranked up at 10. JB, myself, Mad Dog, and others, 10 to 1 today. We'll have podcast version of the late night Gamecock show. JB filled in for Matt last night. Good conversation with Alex on that. SEC Sunday Night, Four Quarter Friday. Check out all those podcasts on the Chief Sports Network. Don't forget InsideTheGamecocks.com, InsideTheGamecocks.com for our newsletter, which will be out soon today. Maybe a similar topic or two on that. All right, this has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.